Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your instinctive travels of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario? Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Ayo, Bo knows this.
What?
And Bo knows that.
What?
But Bo don't know jack, cause Bo can't rap. Well, what do you know? The Diddog is first up to bat. No batteries included and no strings attached. No holds barred. For move faking, got to get to loot so I can bring home the bacon. Brothers front, they say the drop can't flow, but we've been known to do the impossible like Broadway Joe. So sleep if you want.
You're listening, as I'm sure you know, to Scenario by A Tribe Called Quest. Bo knows this, Bo knows that. I'm here with the man who's calling guts every time.
Wow.
I'm here with Touré.
You went way back with that one.
Let's go, man. Let's do this.
I don't think the audience knows what you're referring to there.
Google that. Google Touré and guts.
And Jay-Z.
Long time coming to have Touré on the podcast. Happy to have him here.
Thank you. How long have I known you?
Since I was a wee thing.
15 years?
It's a long time. You are here on the occasion of a recent news event, which is that A Tribe Called Quest, sans Fife, of course, or with Fife, is releasing a new record in about 7 days from today, roughly.
Yeah, November 11th.
And so you were able to spend some time recently for an Arts and Leisure piece with Q-Tip, Jarobi, talk to Ali, talk to Busta. So let's talk a little bit about that, because obviously since Fife's passing, there's been a lot of... I don't want to say anxiety, but there's been a lot of, there's something very tactile about people's relationship to Tribe, especially for people of a certain age, rap fans of a certain age. And so there's this sort of ambient concern of, are we ever going to get more Tribe material? And frankly, that concern even predates Fife's death.
Sure.
If you think of that.
I mean, yes, we haven't yet seen a truly adult grown-up wing of hip-hop really develop. I think rock and roll has developed that. But, you know, if you're 45 listening to hip-hop, some things are beneath you. Some things are of interest.
But beneath?
Beneath
How about obscure?
No, I mean, like the concerns that you are discussing are not of interest to a 45-year-old, Mr. Whoever. And that runs throughout pop music, but rock music and jazz for some and soul music have found ways to speak to older listeners and respect them. And hip hop has not done that, even though we now have a large number of rappers who are at that age.
Right.
And the first time I spoke to Q-Tip for this piece, we were in his studio in his house
in Jersey.
And one of the things that came up was, I want to be grown up with this. How do I do that? What is the right tone, the right space to be grown up? Not too old so that I've priced out the younger folks, but, you know, respectful. So Tribe was a relatively mature group
early on. They were the elders before they were elders.
Yeah.
If you really look at that time.
Fun and substantive music. And you would hope that they would be able to create that for us, as well as you would hope there would be other people in the world who would be adding to that.
I just listen to Young Thug. I'm fine.
You are a Young Thug. I mean, look, one of the most challenging things that happened within this, because this was a story that was more than just a music story, when, you know, one of the members of the group dies. And I didn't know, I don't think anybody knew they were working on an album at the time he passed away.
No, I mean, to be honest, from my understanding, prior to Fife's death, Tip had been working on some solo material, and you know how Tip's sort of always working on solo material, but like, I had been given the impression that there was sort of a runway where things were starting to maybe come or could come, but there wasn't any conversation about a Tribe record.
So the first time I spoke to him, not on the record, just played me some songs that were unfinished, that were great, but unfinished. And we started talking about Fife. And, you know, he kind of broke down. He didn't sob, but he was clearly, like, upset. It's silent. And I was like, what do I say?
Sure.
You've known him since, you know, you guys were four. You were super close. Like, what am I supposed to say? He was a great guy. Like, what do I know?
Right.
What, you know, or... So we just said nothing for a while, and then the sort of the moment came back. When I went to interview him for real, you know, I'm moving through the chronology of, you know, when you met and how it was when you blew up and why you broke up, and then it was like, okay, here we go. Like, okay, so
right.
Last month's, how was it? Last conversation, how was it?
Mm-hmm.
So what was the call? Who called you? What did they say?
Right.
He said that Fife's manager, Roots, was the one who called Tip and told him, you know, that he didn't make it, he said.
Yeah.
And he said that, and we're sitting in chairs facing each other in the studio in his house in Jersey, and he put his face in his hands, and he started crying. I don't know how many actual tears there were, but it was clearly like, this person cannot speak.
It was an emotionally substantive moment, obviously.
Huge. This is the fifth time in my career that somebody has cried in front of me.
You on that rap Barbara Walters tip.
And the other ones, I kind of knew what to do because they were crying about things. Three of them cried about things that had happened long ago. Mm-hmm. Like I was talking to CeeLo about his mom's passing 20 years earlier to find, you know, or I was talking to Remy Ma about the possibility of going to jail before she went to jail.
Sure.
But this guy I've known for a long time is crying about something that is happening right now.
Mm-hmm. And in a public way, it's not processed because he hasn't spoken about it.
Right.
He hasn't given an interview about it. He hasn't really written something at length about it. So even if he's processed in his personal life or between friends, he hasn't given that part of himself to the world.
And
so there you are being the vessel.
Yes. And as you know, we do this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We encounter certain artists over and over and over. I have interviewed Tribe many times. I interviewed all four of them for the Low End Theory at a place called the Shark Bar, which New Yorkers will remember.
Right. All right.
Just to have interviewed the four of them most journalists have not had that privilege because Jarobi did not really participate in the press for Low End Theory. I knew them, and I had run into Tip many, many times. I remember running into him at the Apple Store the day that the Tribe Called Quest, and here's a look into the part of how the music business functions. The day that the Tribe Called Quest Greatest Hits album had come out, and I had been walking out the door of my place to go to the Apple Store, Genius Bar, got to make my time, grab the mail. Oh, here's the new Tribe CD. Just threw it in my bag and kept going. I don't usually walk around with CDs in my bag.
Sure.
I'm there, and Tip is there, and I'm like, yo, what's up? Oh, I just got your Greatest Hits. And he goes, oh, let me see it. I want to see what's on it. He didn't know what was on it because they probably didn't tell him what was on it.
Can we just shout out all our friends at Jive Records right now? And salute all the dons at Jive Records. Just releasing hits package willy-nilly.
Whatever.
You want a UGK hits package? Sure, why not? We'll just throw it out.
But I mean, you know, we know people, right? You know, if you see...
You're around long enough,
they
become. It's part of the fabric of your, not your daily life, but your professional life.
And you'll see them at a party when you're not on the record or whatever, chat with them, you know, whatever. It gets into a gray area, right, where we are close enough that I can get the story that a stranger would not get, but we're not friends.
Mm-hmm.
So this grown man is crying about something very serious. We are not friends, but we are very friendly for 20, 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Do I get up and hug him?
Mm.
Do I try to touch hands with him?
Mm-hmm.
Do I...
give a pat on the shoulder or something?
Pat on the shoulder.
Yeah.
I mean, also, like, how does a man comfort another man?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I just go pure journalist and just...
Wall off.
Let it happen and see how long it happens?
Mm-hmm. So how'd you play it?
I just... kind of sat there, and I mean, like, each second was reevaluating, like, should I still do this? What do I do? Do I get up? No, don't do it. And then it was silent, and I was like, okay, let it be silent. You know, like, you can't control it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after, you know, he was ready, he kind of was like, you know, we want to celebrate him.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of started coming back to his own equilibrium on his own. And
what did you sense his relationship was with grief at this moment? Because it's been Fife passed, I believe it's in February.
It was March.
Yeah. So it's been 8 months, 7 or 8 months. What was the vibe you got from Tip as far as where he is in his grieving process?
And the answer to that, and I didn't ask that specific question, but it's hard to answer. But an answer to that may come from this, because after that moment of him crying, I wanted to talk about that you are listening to him all the time. So how's that? And he cut me right off. It's very hard.
Yeah.
It's super hard.
Yeah, sure.
And so it sort of gives you a sense of this is very present. This is very right now. Mm-hmm. He's not to the stage of like seeing his picture and being like, yay. It's still like, oh my God, I can't believe he's gone.
Did you get the sense from him and really from anyone involved in the project about external pressures being placed on them to release music with some kind of within a time frame?
I would not say there's been significant external pressure. I mean, it was 18 years since the last group album, you know. And the story has been that Fife has been sort of leading the mission of like, come on, let's do something. And Tip was always like, I want it to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And when he finally came down off of that, then he was like, okay, let's just do something. Mm-hmm. One thing that he said that didn't get in the piece, a voice is not a voice if it's just in your head. Then it's just a thought. You need action.
Tip.
Yeah, it's very philosophical.
Tip.
You know, it's definitely like, you know, we're not doing anything. Like, let's do something.
Tip's always good for like three or four of those in any interview.
It's very, very philosophical.
So you got to hear some of the music.
Some.
In fragmented form.
He played me a song that was called Solid Wall of Sound. If memory serves, you have Jack White and Elton John on that record.
And Elton John. Now.
And Jack White, if I perceived it correctly, is saying Solid Wall of Sound in this really cool way. That's reminiscent of the Elton John chorus of...
it's like a zillion Elton John songs.
Benny and the Jets.
Okay.
It was amazing. And it stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And I can still kind of hear it, the chorus and the hook of it. Some of the other songs were just fantastic. But, you know, one of the things that cut out, Busta Rhymes. I asked him for 15 minutes of his time for an interview. And we talked for 75 minutes because he's like, you know, I like you, I know you, I love these guys, and I want to just tell the whole story as I can.
Yeah, and that's their, like, big brothers to him.
Yes, they are. And he spoke about that specifically, that when he had problems in his world of leaders of New School, whatever, he would literally go to their homes or their studio and hang out with them. And that's why he said he's on so many of their records from Low in Theory in that period, because he was always hanging around with them because he was unhappy where he was. So so he's on Scenario because he was there.
Right. And he also and we'll talk a little bit about the Fife Memorial later on, but like he was also at Fife's Memorial, and he, of everybody who spoke at Fife's Memorial, like Busta was the most visibly affected person who was not in Tribe Called Quest. You know, everybody had up and shared, you know, was in their feelings and in their emotions, but Busta looked, I don't want to say unwell, but he looked very broken.
I mean, it was a shock for all of them.
You got the sense that they were not totally clued in. I mean, this is in your piece. They were not totally clued in to the severity of where Fife's health was at that moment. Because obviously he had stretches previously.
I think they knew how serious his situation was, but even his wife said he was fine. He was in a great place at the end. He was healthy. He was eating. It was eating right. It was a surprise to all of them that his body failed when it did, because they were not seeing signs of that. He was still, he was talking about the near future of, you know, I'm going to buy a house down the street from you, Tip, and I'm going to buy a new ring for my wife. You know, I'm going to buy a Bentley truck. I mean, like, he was thinking about, like, you know, we're moving forward. Everybody was, you know, so it was a shock, you know, even to his wife was like, it was a shock when it happened. Mr. Energetic, who me sound pathetic? When's the last time you heard a funky diabetic? The one thing I would say with Busta, you know, in the piece he says, you know, that he saw them in the studio high-fiving and really getting that old vibe back. And the fuller quote is a little richer, because what he was talking about was a moment when Jarobi was like, you know, they are really vibing.
Tip and Fife.
Let's hang out upstairs and let them do their thing and not get in their way. And of course, Busta said yes. But then he would, and he describes this, he would sneak down and peek and watch them, you know, unaware. Yeah. And then he saw them having these great moments. And then the idea of Busta Rhymes, who's tall and huge, muscle bound, sneaking.
Like mischievously.
Mischievously, like a little boy. I want to see what my big brothers are doing. Like, oh, they're cooking up some marvelous shit. Like, I love that. I love that image.
The stuff that you heard, did it feel of a piece with the OG records? Did it feel evolutionary?
I would say evolutionary, but it's really difficult for me to even talk because I heard 6 songs twice.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's much more.
I believe that that's about a quarter of the album.
I got it.
But yes, from what I would say, evolutionary versus what you... So you would know this is different than that other stuff.
What did Tip tell you that he wanted to accomplish with this record besides paying tribute to Fife and celebrating Fife? Like, what role can A Tribe Called Quest record play in 2016?
I mean, these guys... The group begins with their relationship, right? And he talked about meeting Fife at 4. He said Fife was the one who said, let's rhyme, let's be rappers, when they're about 9, 10.
Yeah.
So he sort of motivates this journey. But the specific journey into this album, out of 18 years not doing anything, was them performing together at Jimmy Fallon.
Mm-hmm.
And the feeling of being together again was very strong for them. That's what they really loved.
That's what they were trying to access.
Yes, that's what Tip really enjoyed. When he felt that on stage, then he said, let's perpetuate this. And another thing, because they'd asked him for so long, come on, let's do it. And he said, no. So after the Fallon performance, when he started to say yes, people around them were sort of like,
oh,
whoa, this is different. So the next night at Santos Party House, there was a 25th anniversary party for People's Instinctive Rhythms of Travels. Busta said that he was in the DJ booth with Tip and Jarobi.
Mm-hmm.
And Busta said, not knowing Tip's changed mindset, Busta said, let's do another Tribe album. And Tip right away said, okay. And he was so shocked that after all this time, he finally said
all
yes.
All these years of
quickly,
obstinate.
And then he was like, he was taken aback. And he was like, maybe he's not taking the question seriously or whatever. Like, we need to do something to commemorate the moment, to make it bigger. So run out and get some alcohol to celebrate the moment. Toast to that. Like, so now we are doing another album. And so he sort of took it like this was the...
He was the spark.
This was the spark. And it's like...
Shouts to Busta.
But it was like, well, you know, they were... 24 hours earlier, they were already in motion.
I mean, hey, we all write the narratives in our head that make us comfortable.
We are always the center of our story.
That's absolutely true. Okay, so before we go any further, let's actually listen to a little bit of that Fallon performance. So this is Tribe Called Quest with The Roots playing Can I Kick It?
I miss you thinking, would you please be my
player?
Or you be doing us a really big
favor.
Check out this track, really has a lot of
flavor.
And when it comes to Mr. Sex, it's your
savior.
So follow us for the monkey behavior. And make her no older than the...
Okay, so Can I Kick It? Let's time machine real fast. Let's go back to the era of Can I Kick It. Tell me a little bit about your earliest interactions with Tribe, both as a listener, but also... then eventually as a professional.
I loved the debut album.
Did you write about the debut album? This is sort of paralleling the early days of your career, though, right?
Correct. I was not in... So let me take a step back. I grew up in Boston, going to prep school.
Yep.
We were definitely middle class.
The Milton boys.
So, yes. The whole Native Tongues movement was very attractive to me. It was very intellectual. It was not nearly a street. You know, I was definitely, into Afrocentrism and would grow more as I moved through college. So that whole thing was really speaking to me. I loved De La Soul. I loved the Jungle Brothers and X-Clan, also not Native Tongues, but in that realm intellectually. And which is not to say that I didn't also love Slick Rick and, you know.
Right.
But the ecosystem
supported all of that simultaneously.
Absolutely. But yes, they were, you know, those Native Tongues and Public Enemy were, KRS were some of my favorite stuff then. So, love the first album. The second album, Low End Theory, I definitely interacted with as a professional in that I wrote about it for Rolling Stone, interviewed them, wrote about it for Rolling Stone. I mean, I just loved them. There was nothing to not love. They were mm-hmm. lovely guys. They were nice. You know, they made great music.
How did you feel about them as compared to De La and the Jungle Brothers? Because I feel like their value proposition, certainly by low-end theory, but even in People's Instinctive Travels, their value proposition was, I think, a little bit different. They felt like they extended and refined a project that the Jungle Brothers had started and De La had taken in maybe like a quirkier direction.
Okay.
And then Tribe was like, actually, we're creating a thing of historical reference and yeah. thereby historical importance.
Okay, sure. I mean, you know, the line for me, I would say, is that De La and Tribe are the two largest seminal members of that
mm-hmm.
Native Tongues era. Right? The Jungle Brothers, fantastic, but they made too few albums
mm-hmm.
versus De La and Tribe. Tribe gave you more jazz mm-hmm. elements and more abstract philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
De La was a little more soulful, funky,
mm-hmm.
and De La was more in the realm of meta records
yep.
of like making fun of the entire notion of doing yeah. an album or yeah. whatever.
De La is like and weirdly like experimental rap theater, especially
yes.
with Prince Paul involved. Like it's experimental rap,
especially
theater.
especially with De La Soul is Dead,
yes,
and very self. I mean, you know, look, to me, it just to put the albums on a table. De La Soul to me is the greatest group in hip hop history.
Mm-hmm.
Tribe is very close.
Does that include duos?
No.
Okay, just checking.
No.
Just
we've
checking.
Had this argument on, not you and I, but we as a culture have had this argument on Twitter that two people is not a group. That's a duo.
I just want to be clear.
A word in English.
We
for
just
have
very dedicated listeners. I just want to be clear what the framework of the debate is.
And I think we should also, when we're going to have that debate, differentiate a duo like Gangstar. Mm-hmm. From a duo
EPMD.
Like EPMD.
Yeah.
Yes, which are accomplishing two different things.
I will promise you this. When we have the round table, where we actually have that debate in real time, I'm going to bring you back for that.
All right.
All right, so we're going to go in on that.
But these are granular decisions that we have to go
through. We're all going
to
have to do a lot of prep work, but like we'll come back for that.
Indeed.
So but De La, in your mind,
I
best
love
group.
De La. They're so smart. And because I loved De La and they were professionally brothers with Tribe,
yeah.
it was like, well, you know, we got to dig into them too.
I'm going to buy in on this.
Yeah. And I mean, I loved them right away. I mean, about 2 or 3 years ago, I was moving some sort of bed frame from somebody else's house in Brooklyn and Fort Greene mm-hmm. to my house.
Mm-hmm.
Ali Shaheed Muhammad happened to be walking down the street with his girlfriend at that moment. And he, without being asked, was like, I would be happy to help you carry that six blocks. Like,
incredible.
We were going somewhere, but it's fine. You know, we'll get there when we later, and we'll have, and like, you just help. I mean, like, you're a star. You could be like, you know, great, I'll see
great.
You later.
Yeah.
I'm busy.
Wow.
And we, you know, I'm just happy. But, you know, he's a lovely guy. They're all lovely guys like that. And
rappers most likely to help you move a bed frame. It's a good list. Just for later. It's a
I
good
think
list.
Paz the Deuce would help.
Paz would help. I like to think like Styles P would help. Like I like to think
Styles
Gentleman P. and a Gangster. You know, I like to think he would help. We'll see. This is actually a good future interview question. Like,
yes.
Would you help a friend?
Would you help?
So,
I mean, you know, just lovely guys, great music.
And you understood People's Instinct to Travel sort of as a function of De La and Jungle Brothers at that
yes,
time.
They, yes.
And I think the move between that album and Low End Theory is really when Tribe comes into full flower. It's when Fife shows up as an equal partner.
Yes.
It's when the aesthetic is much more refined. Like, I remember when Beneath Applebaum first came out, there was part of me that was like, this is meandering in a weird way. Like, you know, especially coming
wow.
off of De La,
no.
which is very crisp. But De La is very crisp.
You just
and I remember,
fouled.
I'm gonna write you a ticket.
Here's the thing.
One of the beautiful things about adulthood is embracing earlier mistakes in your life and owning it and then growing from them.
So I mean, like, I loved Benita Applebaum from the first time I heard it. I thought it was an amazing record.
Benita Applebaum. You miss, I must beseech you. Mm-hmm. Hey, be Ain't no need to question the authority.
And, you know, left my wallet. I mean, those are two extraordinary records. There's enough songs on there that, you know, as you would say, are sus.
Yes, right? True story.
But those two songs were so great that it was like, wow, if you could make those, then I need to keep checking for what else you do.
Sure.
I tend to not judge artists downward on mistakes or bad art, only upward on good art.
Oh, you're a better man than I am.
Well, I mean, I don't think that we should remove points for a bad movie or a bad album or whatever. Like, there's so many reasons why a piece of art can be bad.
Oh, I get that.
But to be great is unique. So, you know, for me, it's like you had a great album, you put a point up on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your next album was whack. That doesn't mean you lose a point. You still had the point. Okay. You just didn't gain a point when you had a chance to.
We can agree to disagree about that, because I'm out here docking points nonstop. No, like, it's like literally part of my job. It's on my business card. Point docker.
That's right. You sound like Stanley Crouch, the hanging judge.
So Low End Theory, though, is really the moment of full Tribe realization in my mind.
Yeah.
And that record, it's interesting because I think for an average listener in 2016, they might be like a rap listener of today would listen to that and be like, wow, it's really like minimal. It's like kind of like almost dusty and lo-fi.
Jazz does not get much of a play in modern hip hop at all. So
no.
It might sound.
It just said it doesn't like. I remember I heard around Five Steph, Hot 97 and Power 105 were obviously playing like older Tribe songs, like sprinkled in, and it's just the fidelity difference between contemporary rap music and that is, you know, it's eons apart.
I mean, at that point, as a young critic, I was trying very actively to, you know, broaden my personal library as much as possible.
Sure.
So I was spending a lot of time, you know, getting the labels to say, hey, send me that box set of like,
oh yeah,
all your stuff from the 50s and 60s, and stuff like that. So I was listening to jazz a lot, as well as going through the history of soul and R&B and all these sorts of things. So Tribe really fit in that in a nice, warm way of like, they're really dealing with jazz in a really interesting way.
And it was also a moment of hip-hop's sort of an argument within hip-hop and about hip-hop, about its seriousness, not just its sort of, not as like a resistance movement or any, but sort of like, can it be mature? Can it be modern?
Yeah.
Can it respect the ancestors while also moving aesthetics forward?
Yeah.
And I feel like Low End Theory is really the first album that faces that sort of public conversation head on and then sort of like gives it a middle finger and is like, actually, yes.
None of the people we have named have a voice that is as unique and as much of a gift of an instrument as Q-Tip.
Yeah.
And just the first time you heard that voice and the thousandth time you heard that voice, you're like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's an amazing sound and it just grabs you. And it's such an important part of loving Tribe.
Mm-hmm. And also the balance between Tip and Fife. And this is something that obviously with Fife's passing, we've all had to like think about critically in the last year. But that balance of philosopher and everyman, that balance of nasal and tart, reference points that are sort of like high-minded, but then also sports.
Yeah,
that balance is something that I think at the time helped Tribe not to be this abstract thing. Like there were other rappers who were working with jazz that like didn't get love on the streets.
Yes.
You know? But it allowed Tribe to sort of maintain this foot in both worlds and to be basically as much a sort of like a rap act for the scholars as also for Yon2E Raps.
Yes, absolutely. No, and Andre 3000 talked about that in the piece about...
Yeah, you get that Andre 3000 secondary. He was heavy, heavy Torre.
No, Andre was talking about that Fife, you know, was just a common, natural guy. But, you know, I got to go back to the sound of Tip's voice. This is a unique weapon in the history of hip-hop that we would struggle to think of other people who have a sonic advantage
like that.
Like he does.
Sure.
Like he really could do the phone book and you'd be like, wow, that sounded really good.
Mm-hmm.
Guru had a great voice. Who has got a super unique sound to their, right? Easy.
Mm-hmm.
maybe Wayne.
Yeah, maybe Wayne. You could say Andre. You could say Andre does.
Yeah, Andre. I mean, yes.
Okay, so you've spoken to Tribe a bunch over the course of their career.
Yeah.
I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how you saw them evolve. Because I didn't get to interview them till the Love Movement.
Right.
And by that point, I remember this was like, this was a just a frame to give a little reference point for our listeners. This was a cover story in 1998, I guess.
Okay.
Trace magazine, which is a thing that no person listening probably knows what it
is. I remember Trace,
I know you do.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a Trace magazine cover story.
Was that Claude?
It was Claude.
Claude
Piece
Kinitsky?
To Claude. Piece to Claude.
I still know.
Yeah. Claude.
See him around.
Gave me an early break and always grateful to Claude.
That was a beautiful looking magazine.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Beautifully shot. Yeah. But, you know, at that point, I'm like, I'm interviewing a Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah, man.
I'm like, my eyes are wide. Like, my ears are open. I'm pumped. Yeah. And I get in the room and I'm like, man, these dudes hate each other. I was shocked.
Yeah.
I was shocked, and obviously I wasn't mature enough as a writer to like adequately convey in the piece what was going on. But I remember leaving the room so bummed because I was like, man, this is upsetting that they don't like each other. They're not happy to be in a room together. I wonder, over the course of your interactions with them throughout the 90s, from 93 on to 98, what is it that you saw in terms of them as a group and how they interacted with each other?
It's an interesting question. I did not talk to them in that period that did.
Oh, so not you didn't talk to them for Midnight Marauders or...
Correct. So I remember talking to them for Low End Theory when they seemed very much a unit and very strong. I remember talking to Q-Tip later in his solo career for MTV2 for a show I did for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then for BET when he was doing his solo album. And then there might have been some other things in between there. But that moment you're talking about, I didn't see that as a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't get to talk to them in that
period.
I'm
trying to remember, like, how much of that was in the public discourse? I feel like not very much.
I don't think it was at all until Rappaport
until the documentary.
Movie. And then we saw, generally, the notion of internal rap beef is unusual, as opposed to rock and roll, which is normal.
Right.
The band is going to be at each other's throats, you know, the police, you know, on it, like, whatever. Hip-hop? More professional. We'll beef with other people.
But not internally.
Not, I mean, and NWA, Ice Cube, perhaps, you know, the exception that proves the rule.
Mm-hmm.
I know of certain rap figures who dislike each other immensely, but we wouldn't necessarily know.
Yeah.
And we would not have known of discord within Tribe without the Michael Rappaport movie.
Right. So let's jump forward to the Rappaport movie, because I think if we're going to tell the story of Tribe... That movie is very important.
Yeah.
I've known Q-Tip since we were about 2 years old.
We met in church. Best friends, you know what I'm saying? He was the one who said to me, yo, you should rhyme. And if you could rhyme, that was like a big deal.
Then he had met Ali in high school, and before you knew it, it was on.
You had one voice that was high.
A little high-pitched voice. I hated my voice.
And then you had Tip, who was like in the middle.
And that was always a dynamic.
The yin and yang of those two, that to me was the perfect marriage.
And it's interesting how, from Rappaport's perspective, it starts out as this love letter. It starts out as, I'm a huge fan. I literally just want to be on the bus, bro. Like, that's, like, just please let me, like, bask in the, let me get some reflected light.
Well, before we even get to that, right, before we all experience the film itself, we are inundated with Q-Tip hates the movie about Tribe Called Quest.
Right.
So we enter it with, like, should we like this? Should we be mad about this?
Right, like, whose side?
Whose side are we on, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you're with Tribe, you're like, we watch this with our arms folded and our brow, like, what did you do, white man? You know? Or you could be like, you know, well, let's see what Michael did. Maybe he doesn't like it because it's too truthful.
Right.
So
anyone who follows Tribe knows that Tip is very particular. So
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'll say it. You don't have to say it. That's what I'm here for. That's what I do.
That's why I'm not going to interview them on the next album.
Oh, no. I'll talk to them. I got no problem with that. I'm just saying.
Tim, you got no problem with it. They're not talking to you. Caramano, you hear what he said on that podcast?
I'm just saying. Tip's very particular. I think when Tip looks in the mirror, he knows he's very particular.
That's
not news.
It's, you know, it's funny. I think if I had come up now, I probably would have dissed artists on Twitter. Like, your album sucks, blah, blah, blah.
And like in a thoughtful way, like this album's not very good. And then they're like, we don't want to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because he dissed our record on Twitter. Like, you know, we were able to maintain our opinions longer, privately longer.
Yeah, now no more. It's all right. That's why I have the podcast. I just share it with everybody.
Just tell
the world. So the buildup to that movie was this sort of like tension between Tip and Rappaport.
Yes.
And then you actually see the movie and you realize why that happened. And the reason that happened is because it starts out as this weird love letter
that's
like basically completely uncritical. And then it just, it literally, the cameras are on as the wheels are falling off.
I mean, I'm sure that there are many other music documentaries in which that happens, in which they catch the group fighting and the group buried the footage.
Of course.
For whatever reason, they were like, let it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure there were lawyers involved in that. But a thing that I think was really striking about that, and you look at the dynamic between Tip and Fife in that film, like Ali is just like, hands off. Like, I'm not it. Like, Ali's like, I'm not it. But there's that great line where Fife is just like, you want to be Michael? Like, that's cool. But, like, don't talk to me like I'm Tito.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Why you always got to be the center of attention? You know what I'm saying? And in the midst of being the center of attention, that's cool if you want to play Michael. But stop trying to front like I'm Tito or some shit. You know what I'm saying? And no disrespect to Tito, but it's just the whole Tito play the background. So Fife's just supposed to play the background and shut the fuck up.
If I'm asking you a something wrong, say the shit, B. Don't fucking come in and talk all this crazy loose shit.
But there is, like, what it also showed me, even though there was all this friction in the film, like, you don't fight with someone like that unless you love them. To me, in watching that film, it felt like the fight that comes from genuine love.
Clearly there's deep love between them. These guys have known each other forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the basis of the group is in their relationships.
Yeah.
To have that movie, you know, again, this group takes on an extra significance because of the human interest story involved in it. And when you get down to the end and Fife is going for surgery and, you know, this one is there, but this one is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's about just people trying to deal with getting older and dealing with each other. And, you know, it's very hard.
I'd like to close by talking a little bit about Tribe's legacy, because I think, you know, we're going to have this record coming soon. Whether it alters the bigger picture of Tribe is, you know, who can say.
Sure.
A thing that I was very struck by when I went to Fife's memorial is there were people there who were elders, Grandmaster Flat, you know, like the OOGs.
Right.
And then there were younger artists. There were people from different regions. Tribe was like this weird hub around which you could orient almost all of hip-hop up until, say, 04 or 05 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They had a foot in so many different spaces, and they were revered by so many different types of rappers.
Yeah.
And that was really striking to me. And I can't think of another group. Like, you can't say that of De La necessarily. Like, you can't say that. I mean, obviously it sets the table.
I don't think that's fair. I think you could say that about De La. I think there's a lot of connections, these sort of social connections, multi-generational connections that you're talking about. I think that's real. I mean, guys who have been working it for decades are going to have known everybody and created these deep relationships. Mm-hmm. And
a thing that I've been struck by continuously is how many movements, sounds, artists are really just one step away from Tribe. They're one spoke.
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me about that.
Oh, yeah. We had a whole conversation with Q-Tip that didn't make it in the piece about artists who he sees who are inspired by Tribe.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, I had to talk him down out of, it's not an egotistical gesture. It's a musicological gesture.
It's a fact.
Yeah, you're not saying we're so great, we inspired all these people, but we just understand music and we see. I would not necessarily have put D'Angelo in the Tribe Called Quest family tree. He does.
Sure.
Also Pharrell, Kanye, Outkast. It was actually kind of funny because he did the discussion of who he has inspired in the voice of Miles Davis. So, and his Miles Davis,
he took on the
yes. So he was imitating Miles
wild,
as he was doing it.
And it's a really good Miles impression. It was kind of crazy, this high nasal voice you've heard coming out of this mouth, this face, and to hear the low, deep croak. But I think that also sort of helped him create a barrier of, like, I'm not saying it, like, Miles is saying it.
Uh-huh.
He also mentioned Kendrick, Lamar, J. Cole, Lauryn Hill, of course. I mentioned Farside, and he agreed with that. Kanye. I mean, you know, there's the Chant. NWA.
I'm sure Chance is a big Tribe fan.
Yes, Digable Planets. We mentioned Arrested Development, Common, obviously. I mean, look, this is one of the most important groups in hip-hop history, no doubt. A group that was fun and substantive, that could really rhyme, but could rhyme also at a level that, you know, could get mass appeal.
Yep.
Used jazz in a really smart and thoughtful way.
Mm-hmm.
Told stories, you know, Beneath Applebum. Left My Wallet in El Segundo was a real story.
Mm-hmm.
A group that spread a lot of love and positivity.
What's a favorite or the favorite Tribe song of yours?
I can't pick one. Let's pick one.
So pick a great one.
I can't pick
We'll go out on a great one.
I mean, a Ward Tour.
Okay, so we'll go out with a Ward Tour with Torre, my man.
We on a Ward Tour.
So I be sublime. It's enjoyable to know you and the concubines. Diggins, take off your coats. Ladies act like gems. Sit down. Indian styles, you recite these hymns.
Thanks for listening to the New York Times podcast. Thanks to our guest, Torre. I've been your host, John Caramonica. Our producer is Jocelyn Gonzalez. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or anywhere you get your audio content. You can read Torre's article about the Tribe Called Quest comeback in Arts and Leisure and at nytimes.com/music. You can read my pieces on the passing of Fife at nytimes.com/music. Come back and see us next week.
Who could drop it on the angle? They're cute at that. So do that, that.
Come on.
Do that, that.
Yeah.
Do that. I'm bugging out.